Allison Fitzgerald, let's begin with you. Quite a report by the Center for Public Integrity looking at this issue and in particular how it's affecting Jacksonville. The poster child for this problem is a former Jacksonville homeowner named Kelly Young. Tell us about her story and why this is indicative of the problem as a whole.
Well, Kelly is, you know, a particularly harsh case. She got an she got a foreclosure notice in 2009 from Bank of America after she fell behind in her payments, and you know, knowing full well that she could not afford to continue to make payments on her home, she moved out. She did, you know, she said, you know, you're right, I can't do this. She moved out, left the house to the bank. 6 years later, the bank still has not completed the foreclosure. What happened to Kelly is she was living on disability, as was her daughter, when the Social Security Administration found out that she still, quote, owned a home. They cut off her payments. They cut off all her income. It was very harsh, hard on her. Allison Albert, who's with you, was working with Kelly to get those payments restored. But the issue is that she still has this house in her name. The house is falling apart. It's uninhabitable. She doesn't have the money to fix it up, and nobody else will take it from her. So she's sort of in this limbo where she can't get it out of her name, but also can't afford to keep it. And it's, you know, messing up all kinds of other areas of her life.
And Allison Albert, this is a tough story for this Jacksonville woman, and it's by far from the only issue like this that you deal with at Legal Aid. Why didn't Bank of America complete the foreclosure, and how common is this problem?
We've identified approximately 4 properties at Jacksonville Area Legal Aid. The trick is identifying these zombie properties. One of the theories as to why they don't complete the foreclosure is after they serve the foreclosure notice, a responsible homeowner who realizes they can't afford payments, even with a modification, will move out. Banks do not go in and protect the property. They don't preserve it. They don't stabilize the property. And then the case proceeds through the foreclosure process that takes a lot of time. And once it gets to the culmination, to a trial or summary judgment, there's no longer any value in the property. There's negative value. It needs to be demolished. And at that point, the bank makes a financial decision to no longer pursue the foreclosure, to voluntarily dismiss the case and leave the property in the name of the homeowner that responsibly moved out years beforehand.
And so how, in your view, Councilwoman Lee, you've been very active on the issue of blight. These foreclosed abandoned properties are contributing to blight across the city. So as we hear about this, what are your thoughts?
Well, first of all, let me say that I feel very bad for Ms. Young, and my heart certainly goes out because not only did she literally become homeless? She has serious medical issues and a 16-year-old daughter. So I think in that, you know, any help that she can get, and I think this is probably one of the more unique cases. But at the end of the day, obviously throughout the country, the foreclosure crisis didn't just hit Jacksonville. It hit everywhere. And the Blight Committee is addressing this issue of abandoned properties that's now being referred to as zombie properties. And one of the things that we are doing and have done is to introduce legislation, because you will find many of them are non-historic properties. And the committee has introduced legislation to deal with this issue. I appointed a subcommittee that's being chaired by Warren Jones, City Councilperson Warren Jones, to deal with this issue with the real estate person on that committee, Mr. Jay Higby, and others. But you mentioned earlier that many of these properties are found in poor neighborhoods. I would like to say that everybody in these neighborhoods are not poor, but this continued sore that continues to fester and grow, not only does it give the appearance of a poor neighborhood, but it does become poor because no jobs come in, no new businesses come in, any existing businesses move out. And also, I just like to point out that even though the banks, because a lot of people sometimes compare evictions to foreclosures, there's a total difference difference in that. And I would suggest that education is the key to this because, number one, like Ms. Young, instead of seeking, can I get some help? I've got this letter. She just said, you know what? I got this letter. I'm gone.
Is that what happened? Allison Albert.
She did. At the time, she's very ill. She receives dialysis 4 or 5 times a week. She has a disabled daughter. A foreclosure puts an immense amount of stress on the homeowner. She realized she couldn't afford the property. She did the responsible thing and she moved out. Had she come to Legal Aid and sought my advice in 2009, in her situation, I would have advised her to move out and let the bank take the property. She did not have the income to support a mortgage. She did the responsible thing.
And so, Allison Fitzgerald, the overwhelming thrust of your investigative piece, which, by the way, is on the Center for Public Integrity's website, is that cities increasingly are taking on banks. And trying to hold them responsible for these properties. You name a few cities, Memphis, Baltimore, Cleveland. In your estimation, should Jacksonville turn its attention to the bank's role in all of this?
Well, I can't give the city of Jacksonville advice on how they should deal with it, but the cities who have had very mixed results. Some have had some, you know, just putting pressure on the banks, going to the banks, just at least been able to get them to the larger banks mostly at least take better care of the properties that are abandoned, that are in their portfolio. And I spoke to people at Bank of America and at Wells Fargo. They, at least Wells Fargo did say that they take care of properties even if they don't hold title to them. But, you know, legally, if you don't hold title to the property, it's hard to force the banks to actually take and rehab and that kind of thing. There are some provisions in the recent settlement that say essentially that the banks have to put aside money in order to help rehab properties and fight blight.
And you're talking about a federal settlement through the Justice Department, correct?
Yeah, and it's unclear how that's going to play out because it's so new, how the banks are going to be able to, you know, allocate that money that they've been forced to allocate in order to deal with some of these abandoned properties. And it's unclear also whether it's enough money, you know, to deal with all of them.
Okay. And the lines are jammed, meanwhile, as we welcome Jacksonville City Councilwoman Denise Lee, Legal Aid Attorney Allison Albert, and reporter Allison Fitzgerald. We'll go to your calls in one moment at 549-2937. Councilwoman.
Yes, I was listening, and I totally agree that they should be held accountable. But in reality, again, I think it has to do with a lot of things. For instance, the Blight Committee, this has been a discussion because in our research in dealing with this issue, we found, for instance, we took 70 properties to see who the homeowners were. Let's just say 60% of those properties were owned by the banks that had done anything. So that is a part of the discussion. But the question has to be raised, is there a process that the bank has to be held accountable for? For instance, is there a timeline for you to get back with the person and respond and follow through the process, through the procedures of foreclosure? Ms. Young's case, they didn't get back with her. So here you go, 4 or 5 years later, she's trying to do something and you told her. So the bottom line is that you've got to get rid of these antiquated processes that exist and deal with the current situation that's on the table. And I think that banks, as well as, a lot of these investors are hiding behind foreclosure. You know, some people have had properties for 20 years and did nothing. Mm-hmm. And now that we're looking at this non-historic issue, you know, some of them are kind of screaming and hollering,
okay.
Oh, no.
And let's go now to lots of calls on this topic. And Allison Albert, we'll go to your response in just a moment. I just want to get a few callers on since we're a little behind. And let's go now to Matt in Atlantic Beach. Hi, Matt. Go ahead.
Hi. I actually live in one of these zombie houses. I didn't find out for a long time that my home is even being foreclosed. I was paying rent to my landlord, and she was just spending it on her new infinity. Honestly, it's just been a total crash in my life, honestly. And so I'm working really hard to move out, move to St. Augustine. And I heard a councilman suggest, not the councilman that's on today, but I can't remember their name, suggested that we take those foreclosed homes and refurbish them for homeless veterans. And I think that's a great idea.
Yeah.
I think that's a real solution to what's going on here.
Yeah, thank you, Matt. Yeah. Allison Albert.
The problem with trying to rehab these properties, first problem is getting the title to the property to somebody that will do the rehab work. We have to get it out of the name of these homeowners that vacated years ago. We have to get it in the hands of somebody that has the ability and the funds to rehab these properties. I've tried to donate zombie properties to nonprofits around the cities. They don't have the funds to rehab them. It's an initial investment of $20,000 to demolish a property that's been sitting vacant for several years. So
nobody wants to take that on.
They don't. They can't.
Let's go to Peggy in Avondale. Hi, Peggy. Go ahead.
Hey, we have a house in our neighborhood that has been foreclosed upon for several years, and it has been broken into, and people have lived there that are dealing drugs, and it's a blight to our neighborhood. There, right next door to it is a big, beautiful new home that's just been built, and the owner of that home wants very much to buy, to get a hold of the crummy house and fix it, but it's owned by Deutsche Bank, and he has absolutely tried everything in his power to resolve the problem to no avail.
Right, so and we hear that over and over when we do this topic, Peggy. And Allison Fitzgerald, I'm going to quote here from your piece at publicintegrity.org. Jacksonville's poor neighborhoods are dotted with abandoned houses stuck in foreclosure limbo. And by cherry-picking which foreclosures they complete and which they ignore, banks are saddling individual borrowers with a permanent, inescapable debt while helping to create slums in already struggling communities. These vacant homes often attract drug dealers and squatters and bring down the value of surrounding properties. You're accusing the banks of creating slums in our city and many others. Allison Fitzgerald.
Well, I can tell you that if you look at the maps we have on there, you're not going to find a lot of beachfront property that's abandoned and in foreclosure. Those are the properties that actually get taken care of and sold quickly and aren't left to decay. I mean, it's pretty visible. I mean, there are definitely a handful, and I would say, you know, it's not exclusively lower value houses, but if you go to a neighborhood where the houses already don't have the high property values, and many of the homeowners are already struggling because their home values have gone down, maybe their mortgages are underwater, and then you add to it three abandoned homes per block where the banks, even if they're, quote, taking care of them, what they do is board them up and mow the lawn and inspect them once a month and winterize them. That's what every bank I talked to who described what they do in terms of caring for the houses, those were the things. That's not exactly creating a neighborhood. So, you know, it's an issue of how long they're taking either to foreclose and to sell the houses or not. And, you know, you can decide whether those are slums or not. You know, some places have told me, yes, they're creating slums.
Let's go now to Corey in Kingsland, Georgia. We have calls from across the listening area. Corey, go ahead.
Yes, hi. I live in Kingsland here, and I live on Deerfield Circle. We have a house here that's been abandoned for over 2.5 years. They've had people, drug dealers and so on, staying in the house and so on. Now the bank takes care of it, but we've had people that were interested in buying this house, but we don't even know what bank it is. And the people that come to mow the lawn, and they mow the lawn once every 2 months, okay, it looks terrible. They can't tell us what bank owns this. So we have no idea what bank owns this, what they're going to do with the house or anything, but we have people that are interested in buying that house.
Okay. Yeah, thank you, Corey. That's in Kingsland. Denise Lee.
Yeah. Thank you. You know, Corey makes a valid point, but I want to address something real quick because it ties into the legislation, his point. Ordinance 2014-427 is the number of the bill that has been introduced. And basically, It says if a non-historic home has been boarded and without electricity and water service for 24 consecutive months, the property will be abated by the city. But that's still in draft stage, because at the end of the day, a lot of people feel that not-for-profits should be able to take over. But I think there are a lot of things you have to keep in mind. You can't assume that every for-profit or not-for-profit. A lot of these people compete for government money. So even if you took over a lot of them, where are they going to get the money to structurally fix them up? Right. So the bottom line is that, to me, I think that we have to look at all options, but I still believe that the truly blighted, unsafe properties that pose hazards and harbor criminal activity should be demolished, making way for vacant properties to be sold and used for new construction in recovering neighborhoods.
And in your view, do you agree with the general or disagree with the general tone of this piece that the cities are left holding the bag after the bank forecloses and, according to this report, cherry picks whether or not to complete the foreclosure or not? Should Jacksonville have a come to Jesus type of discussion with some of these lenders, as other cities have done?
Yes, I do agree with that. And I mentioned that that is a discussion of the Blight Committee, because it came up in our discussions as we are addressing this blighted problem and abandoned homes in these neighborhoods. And, you know, if you listen to the people who don't want anything to be done, I wish someone would ask them, well, where do you live? Ask the investors, where do you live? And I think that there are a lot of people you have to hold accountable, not just the banks. There are googobs and googobs of people.
I like that word, by the way.
Yeah, googobs and googobs of people, individuals, investors who own these homes, and they live absolutely nowhere near the properties. I think we have to talk about them, too.
And let me just jump in, because we're getting so much feedback online. Here's an email from Jacksonville. Nan writes, stop advising people to move out as soon as they get a foreclosure notice. You have a legal contract and you own the home. Try to work with the mortgage company and get a short sale or a deed in lieu of foreclosure. Your client, Kelly Young, I think she did try to get a deed in lieu, but it didn't work. Here's a tweet from Jay. Did the foreclosure rocket docket in Jacksonville help create this problem by speeding foreclosures? Allison Albert.
Yes. In my opinion, yes, it has. By forcing the banks by setting trials and speeding these up, it takes away the banks and the homeowners' ability to negotiate some kind of resolution by setting trials, by setting sale dates. We have seen banks not showing up for trial, creating these zombie properties. Banks and homeowners go to court together, ask for more time to work out a resolution, and those motions are denied, and a sale date is set, and the property gets sold, usually to the banks.
Let's go to Bobby on the north side now. Hi, Bobby. Thanks for holding. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, I have an issue that I had. I attempted to buy a foreclosed property through FHAVA. It got all the way near to closing and found out they had foreclosed on the wrong document. They canceled my transaction. I lost all the money I put into it. And they turned around and forgave the debt and gave it back to the person who had been renting it out. And this is a common occurrence all over this region. The first thing the city can do is treat banks just like they treat everybody else. If the property is dilapidated and not taken care of, they need to be cited and fined. You know, the city of Fernandina forgave tens of thousands of fines against Bank of America because they were Bank of America. They wouldn't do that for you and I. They need to be held to the same standards that we're held to.
And that's Bobby on the north side. Allison Fitzgerald, what about that argument?
Well, I agree that that's one of the issues, and it's not just in terms of the city ordinances holding banks, cities holding banks as responsible as individuals, but it's happening in the courthouse. As you mentioned, banks will come to court seeking a foreclosure without the proper documentation. And because the legal system in Florida specifically is under so much pressure to push these cases through, that they're getting away with sort of bringing vague, not quite conclusive, perhaps fraudulent documents in and getting their foreclosures and their sales anyway. If I went into a bank, you know, into a courtroom with a check that said I paid, but it wasn't really, you know, I don't think the judge would accept similarly sort of vague documentation from banks. And so there is not equal treatment between individuals and banks. And if there were, it would be a lot more trouble for the banks and perhaps cost them more money, but it might make them think a little bit harder about whether or not it's worth it to them to foreclose on some of these homes.
And lots of feedback on Facebook about people's different neighborhoods. Fred writes, for most of this year, no less than 5 houses in eyesight of mine in zip code 32216 were abandoned. Now it's down to 3. You know, Councilwoman Lee, people slowly over the last 5-6 years have reported improvement on this issue, but we're certainly not out of the woods yet.
Oh, no question about it, particularly in some neighborhoods. But, you know, there's another point I want to make out. We know this problem exists. And I think the story and everything that's being done and pointed out in the other cities is a real help. And I think we should look at some of these efforts to cure. But the bottom line is this. Is that what do we do right now? What do we have to work with? And I think we should exhaust all options. Those folks that we can deal with right now, that is the purpose of this legislation. Let's deal with them. Let's not make excuses. Well, you know, it's been 20 years. My God, you have $100,000 worth of fines. You know, either tear it down or the city, because it's better, because there are people in these neighborhoods and neighborhood organizations that's willing to mow a lawn. I think the city has to step up, because it's just not the abandoned houses. It's the right-of-ways. It's the things that the city of Jacksonville has been negligent on and not doing. So there are a combination of things that we need to do to work together. And the bottom line, and I've said it, and I'll continue to say it, is if everybody comes together and work together in education, that if Allison or Denise or Melissa or someone receives a letter of foreclosure, have we done everything from the media and everybody to educate, public service announcements, you know, legal aid is providing whatever, you know, to see if I qualify.
And let's give our legal aid attorney the last word, since we are almost out of time for this, Allison Albert.
I would like to say that legal aid has specifically addressed these problems. We currently have 5 pending complaints with HUD systemic investigations regarding REO bank-owned properties for failure to maintain those properties. We have filed the complaints. They are pending. We had a very favorable conciliation with Wells Fargo. As far as the zombie properties that are put back in the that are left in the name of homeowners, we are filing those complaints. I have filed HUD complaints. I have filed CFPB complaints. We are actively pursuing remedies to cure this problem for the city of Jacksonville. And we're doing it with 20% less time now. I would be more than happy
because
to help anyone.
Because your funding's been cut.
Yes, we are.
Right.
We have personally taken on this job for the city at 20% less time. I would like to say to Corey up in Kingsland, call your city codes department. When they don't mow the lawn for 2 months, call your city codes and get that property written up. They'll find out who owns it and hopefully be able to do something about it.
And so many people still waiting on hold. Sorry we couldn't get to every single call. It's just indicative of how this continues to affect so many listeners. So thank you, Allison Fitzgerald with the Center for Public Integrity, City Councilwoman Denise Lee, and Allison Albert with Legal Aid. Ladies, all 3 of you, thanks for the discussion this morning.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you, Melissa.